I'm going to speak on the impact of patient engagement through shared decision making. And I am a consultant with the National Nursing Center Consortium and on their governing board, which I really don't think is a problem, but I want to be forthright here in doing it. So the key supporters of this project really were the National Nursing Center's Consortium, Informed Medical Decisions Foundation, the Pennsylvania Governor's Office of Healthcare Reform, Public Health Management Corporation, and Temple University. We started in 2009, our Pennsylvania governor, then Democrat, Ed Rendell, began an Office of Healthcare Reform. And the person in charge of that office was Ann Fragoso, who was an attorney by background. And she was very interested in shared decision-making from the standpoint of informed consent, primarily, as an attorney. But she had a little bit of extra money, even though money was very tight, and Temple University is part of the Commonwealth system. They could do an electronic transfer at the last minute. It went back to NNCC and then back some of it to Temple for me to oversee the project. The Informed Medical Decision Foundation, in terms of the decision aids that are used, and their booklets that are both text and then a DVD. And they really monitor the currency of the data that's in the decision aid, and Health Dialogue produces those. And what we got them to offer is they gave some money for just 1 year, and we've carried this on for way beyond that. Started in 2009, we're still going strong now, and 2014 and expect 15, just because the way we changed the program so we could fully integrate it. And we really, what Ann was looking at was replicating the Dartmouth Institute for Clinical Practice and Shared Decision Making with a Medicaid and uninsured population. And so we were the first group in the country that were using these decision aids on that population. The state of Colorado Medicaid now is doing a project too, but that's just started in within the last year. And it's a very different project where there's a pretty high incentive of $50 for the patients to review the decision aid. And we didn't pay our patients anything to use them. So we really were working with five DIRS practitioner primary care clinics that were federally qualified health centers. And we had a referral sheet that came, and it could come from the clinician, the RN care manager, the referral manager. And I'm going to share some of the decision aids that we use. And then there was a follow-up. They actually either took the decision home and watched it, or they watched it because some of our population did not have anything to watch at home. They watched it on site. And then in the first year, we had money the first year. We had the follow-up by a nurse practitioner. And it was in person or over the telephone. And the idea was to answer any questions in terms of understanding it, to clarify how to fit this decision into their own values, and then to help them really act on that decision. Money ended. You want the project to go on. We found it very valuable. So what we really did basically the next year differently is we used the RN care managers to coach on site with the problem. So we had convinced the administration of these centers that this was worthwhile use of the RN's time, and we didn't have an outside person. In 2014, now what we've done differently is we tried to keep all of that going, but we wanted to really improve our colorectal cancer screening, and there is a decision aid on colorectal cancer. And so we began to show that DVD on large screen televisions in the waiting room. Now, what we learned is in Pennsylvania, the second leading cause of death for adults is colon cancer. So, you know, there was a real motivation to work. It's a preventable cancer. I happen to have personal issues. My mother and a paternal aunt both died of colon cancer, so I envisioned myself having to be really diligent all these times it goes on. And so this has really worked well with the Orient Care managers, and it worked very well in terms of the colon cancer. We're using this for safety net populations, and so it's people who are chronically homeless at one of our sites, so they're living on the street or they're living in shelters. So to prepare for a colonoscopy isn't too much of a chance for them, or even a sigmoidoscopy. The other centers are serving public housing residents. 20 to 40% of our patients are uninsured. 75 to 55 are on Medicaid, depending on the clinic, and 5% have Medicare or private insurance. We use these decisions to begin with that are on the list here as our start. We then added additional ones as we moved forward, and it was very interesting to us that we didn't envision that weight reduction surgery would have a lot of demand. But it did, not that everyone decided to have weight loss surgery, but they were interested in it. And two of our patients at one of the clinics, Medicaid paid for weight loss surgery because they really could document that they tried everything else and were really able to eliminate taking insulin and really do very, very well. We gave this a tagline, better decisions together. We had yellow buttons that the staff would wear saying, ask us about better decisions together to get interest. We had a brochure, so they could even take these home if they were interested for a family member and not themselves. Through 2013, and I haven't counted this up for 2014 yet, this was the number of decision aids that we used. And so you can see that the primary one was used for diabetes. And that was used for group diabetic classes, not totally, but some of the time. And PSA was another area because the thinking and on the PSA, it puts forth the issue that there's many false positives. So if a man is not willing to have a biopsy if they get a positive, there really is no reason to have them do the test and have them upset for it. So the population we had was 43% female, and the reason that is our homeless clinic has a large male population versus female population. 78% had high school or less in terms of education. 90% were under the age of 60, 80% black, not Hispanic. And 76 said when they filled out the survey to watching the decision aid, that they were bothered a lot by the health problem they selected to use a decision aid for. We did see things go both ways. In other words, we looked at previewing and post-viewing for those who looked at the diabetic decision aid, where we have an N of 90 there. And previewing, either they were taking or intent to take a medication for blood sugar was 87%. After viewing, that went up to 92%. Taking or intent to take cholesterol medicine went up from 53% to 72%. And taking or intent to take a blood pressure medicine also went up. So we found people more willing take the medications that they required for their diabetes. With a decision aid. With PSAs, we found the opposite. We found that 89% before said they intended to have the PSA within a year, and afterwards 67%. So that was a sign that the decision aids really worked to increase, and also in this case to decrease. We had limited data, 172 altogether. It's interesting, 169 of our patients never read the book. They only watched the decision aid. And because there's a lot of graphics and blank text, a fairly high literacy level wasn't of interest to them. With a higher literacy population, they tell me that many of the people never take the time to put the DVD in, they just read the book. That 87% believe prior to watching the DVD that they should make the decision by them by, by themselves. And that was, kind of a surprise, because we have, a health disparities, low-income population, and we thought that they would think that it was okay to just do whatever the health provider, but it's more reason then for them to truly understand the risk benefits when they're making decisions. This is especially true, with a safety net population with low literacy and numeracy. Some of these are really on preference sensitive. In other words, spinal stenosis, whether you're going to have surgery or you're going to look at trying an epidural or physical therapy first. So by the time you send them to the specialist, they are not going to just do what they say, but they're going to know what the option, what the risk benefits, and that's our whole goal, is to have them knowledgeable. Now, 92% of patients believe after watching the DVD that this should be a shared decision-making with their healthcare provider. 8% felt that should do it alone. I told you about the colon cancer being so high. And so we really did a PDSA, Plan, Do, Study, Act. Could showing this, DVD in the waiting room make a difference? And, of course, it gives the added, not just a colonoscopy every 10 years, not just a sigmoidoscopy every 5, but using a FIT test. And we can provide that FIT test on site. And it's $20 the cost to us. And we can do it for both insured and uninsured patients. So, and when we looked at October 2013 across the 5 clinics, and we're looking at adults 50 and over, we started out with 6 to 15% having had a colorectal cancer screening within the year. And as of October this year, and we really didn't start this until about 6 months ago, that we've seen this go up to 17 to 31%. And it was just by showing this in the waiting room, and patients actually, some asking before the clinician offered. We're looking at whether this is another way of dealing with other areas for screening, that having it there, depression screening is another one, and showing that and the idea of people feeling they're not alone. So it seems like it's getting this and taking this to a new level. So we aren't doing the pre-post viewing. We're really just looking at the impact on the population. Thank you.